Iran's foreign minister says if the US really wants an agreement on the revival of the 2015 deal, it must prove this in practice and take steps in that direction. North Korea says it's prepared for any military clash with the US, adding that the country is ready to mobilize its nuclear war deterrence. Also coming up, dozens of former US officials are to announce a third national political party in reaction to America's increasingly polarized and gridlocked political system. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, top story this hour, Iran's foreign minister has reiterated Tehran's determination to reach a good and durable agreement to revive the 2015 nuclear deal known as the JCPOA. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark in a phone call with the European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell. Amir Abdullahian said a good agreement would be at hand if the American side took realistic steps in that direction. Iran's top diplomat said if the US is ready or really willing to clinch a deal with Iran, it must prove this in practice. Amir Abdullahian also touched on Borrell's proposed text for an agreement to revive the JCPOA, saying that Iran welcomes the continuation of talks and diplomacy. Borrell, for his part, said the Iranian side has so far proven its serious resolve during the JCPOA revival talks, and it is time for those talks to bear fruit. This came a day after Borrell wrote in a Financial Times article that he has put on the table a draft agreement to revive the JCPOA. He said the proposed text addresses the removal of anti-Iran sanctions and some other remaining differences. Masoud Shajara is the head of the London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission, and he says the West should not expect Iran to fulfill its JCPOA commitments if it cannot reap the economic benefits of the deal.
The reality is that I think it is only right to say that if Iran is not going to benefit from economically and from removal of the sanction, then the West should not be in a position to actually expect the part of Iran to be fulfilled by the Iranian. And I just hope that we will see the end of this tit for tat, and the United States and the West will decide to uphold its commitment, so Iran could go back to its commitment also. But I think what is very obvious is that commitment cannot be one-sided.
Well, turning to other news, Ukraine says it will increase electricity exports to the European Union as the bloc faces an energy crisis triggered by reduced gas supplies from Russia.
We are preparing to increase our electricity exports to consumers in the European Union. Despite the war, we secured the connection of the Ukrainian power grid to the entire European energy system in a record time. Our exports allow us not only to generate foreign currency revenues, but also help our partners withstand Russian energy pressure.
Zelensky added that his country will become one of the guarantors of European energy security. The Ukrainian power grid was connected to the European network in mid-March. The connection enabled Ukraine to receive electricity from Europe if military attacks caused outages. In early July, Ukraine started exporting electricity to the EU via Romania. On Wednesday, Germany said Russia has cut gas deliveries to Europe via the Nord Stream pipeline to about 20% of capacity, down from 40%. EU countries accuse Russia of reducing gas supplies in response to Western sanctions imposed on Moscow over the Ukraine war. Moscow, however, blames technical issues with the pipeline for gas supply cuts.
Up to a quarter of the EU's electricity demand is generated using gas. In some of the bloc's member states, it is higher. As less of it arrives from Russia, EU nations have agreed to reduce gas consumption by 15% until spring.
I think at the end, everybody understands that this sacrifice is necessary. We have to, and we will share the pain.
Many in the European Parliament say the pain is not being shared equally.
Only working class people are dying, but the EU has done nothing to stop us. And so many people in here are glad the war has taken place.
Within NATO, there is opposition to Finland and Sweden joining the military alliance. Within the EU, there is opposition to the bloc's foreign policy towards Russia. There are also tensions between the EU and the UK. At present, it appears diplomacy in the West simply isn't working. Trust between allies is at an all-time low. How this will all play out is anybody's guess. It has been suggested that Russia wants Western allies to fall out.
Now is not the time for finger-pointing. We understand that they want to destroy, they want to divide, they want to split this solidarity and unity.
Critics say the West is responsible for the war in Ukraine because Russia's security concerns were ignored and even preyed upon. Experts suggest the conflict has highlighted the EU's weaknesses and has exposed the lack of energy infrastructure investment within the bloc.
That is why investing in grids, in interconnectors, in something as boring as pipelines, that matters.
Ordinary people in the EU are asking, how did we get to this point? There is a cost of living crisis and all sorts of security concerns. Analysts warn there will be political ramifications. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
We're going to stay in Europe, and the UK summer of discontent continues with yet another major rail strike over pay, jobs and working conditions, in bringing widespread delays and cancellations. It comes a month after London subway workers staged the 24-hour walkout, prompting transport chaos in the capital. Saeed Poreza has this report from the British capital.
Another day, another railway strike, bringing half of Britain's rail network to a grinding halt. Organized by the Rail, Maritime and Transport Workers Union, the 24-hour industrial action has seen more than 40,000 railway workers walk out in a row over job security and pay at a time of soaring inflation. Any hope of an 11th-hour settlement has now been all but dashed.
We're just outside one of the busiest train stations in London, where members of the RMT union have formed a picket line demanding a fair deal. And they're saying if there isn't a negotiated settlement soon, there will be more walkouts in the weeks ahead.
Those words echoed by the head of the RMT union, that industrial action is the way forward.
I can't think of a way at the moment because we've been negotiating for 2 years. But it would be interesting if me and Grant Shapps went head to head. We could see how we got on with that, if that's not too flippant.
Grant Shapps is the transport secretary. Under him, the rail network and the subway have seen billions of dollars in cuts and offered below-inflation pay rises, described by the strikers as paltry. As widespread as the disruption is support for the railway workers. Today, the strikers found Britain's shadow transport secretary joining the picket line in central London.
When Grant Shapps and Liz Truss come on the telly and say to you that it's someone else's fault, that it's the striking rail workers' fault that this dispute is happening, what a load of nonsense. The Trade Union Congress had a legal opinion just a few weeks ago that showed definitively that it is the government who are agitating for this dispute. And it needs to be resolved. It needs to be resolved fairly and justly and quickly for the sake of the travelling public.
The travellers, too, want the dispute resolved quickly.
I love the railway, I love to travel by train, I want to keep doing it, and I don't want to keep thinking, oh God, is it going to be, you know, unreliable?
Well, I totally get why they're striking. Obviously it's an inconvenience for me, but I'm willing to make an exception.
There are more railway walkouts planned for the coming weeks. There are also reports of unrest among teaching staff and National Health Service employees. More disquiet is on the horizon as Britain awaits a new Prime Minister. Saeed Poreza, London.
Turning to other news, the leader of North Korea has issued a stern warning to Washington, saying his country is prepared for any military clash with the US. Kim Jong-un said North Korea's armed forces are prepared to respond to any crisis. He added that the country is ready to mobilize its nuclear war deterrence. Kim also warned the administration of South Korea's President Yoon Suk-yeol that its military could be annihilated if it made, quote, dangerous attempts. Kim's warning came after it was announced that large-scale joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises will go ahead in August for the first time in 4 years. North Korea has been staunchly opposing such joint drills, warning of their destabilizing impact on regional security.
South Korea will soon resume large-scale military exercises with the United States. Seoul's recently appointed foreign minister Wednesday met with the foreign press and explained the importance of the U.S. alliance and the drills.
We expect that the Ministry of National Defense will resume training to maintain the South Korea-U.S. combined defense capabilities so that South Korea's security can be maintained.
The South Korean envoy placed the responsibility for subsequent military tension on North Korea.
North Korea's nuclear and missile development and provocations are the most important causes of tension on the Korean Peninsula.
North Korea recently resumed ballistic missile testing after a self-imposed moratorium aimed at negotiating a lifting of U.S.-led sanctions, which remain in effect. Meanwhile, South Korea's further developed and tested missile technology and deployed several advanced U.S. weapon systems, raising concern in Pyongyang.
The U.S. and its allies are increasing their military pressure on our republic. All this is raising serious concern that the ravages of the war 72 years ago could be repeated here. Our measures to build up national defense capabilities are the legitimate and righteous exercise of our sovereignty to defend our national security and territory against military threats.
South Korea said this year's drills will include 11 field exercises, amphibious operations, and an air carrier strike group. South Korean officials have said the joint military exercises with the U.S. will begin on August 22nd, and for the first time since 2018, include field training. As new South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol pivots to a hardline approach to Pyongyang, inter-Korean ties appear destined for greater tension. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Elsewhere, dozens of former U.S. officials, both Republican and Democratic, are going to announce a third national political party. They say the new party will appeal to millions of voters dismayed with the country's, quote, dysfunctional two-party system. The new party, called Forward, will initially be co-chaired by a former Democratic presidential candidate and a former Republican governor of New Jersey. The founding members hoped the party would become a viable alternative to the Republican and Democratic parties. The new party is being formed by a merger of three political groups that have emerged in recent years as a reaction to America's increasingly polarized and gridlocked political system. A Gallup poll last year showed a record two-thirds of Americans believed a third party was needed. No information has been released on the party's policy, which will be centrist. Staying in the United States, where two former police officers have been sentenced to prison terms for their roles in the May 2020 killing of an unarmed African-American. A U.S. district judge sentenced J. Alexander Kueng to 3 years in prison and To Thao to 3.5 years. The two officers were convicted of violating George Floyd's civil rights by failing to stop the use of, quote, unreasonable force by another officer, Derek Chauvin. Chauvin knelt on Floyd's neck for nearly 10 minutes until he passed out and died. He was found guilty of murder and is serving more than 20 years in prison. The fourth officer was also convicted of violating Floyd's civil rights and was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. A video of Floyd handcuffed and pleading with Chauvin for his life prompted outrage in the days after the incident. Floyd's death led to huge daily protests and against racism and police brutality in cities around the world. When it comes to U.S. weapons sales, it's not just about profits. Washington's foreign policy initiatives should also be counted, as can be seen in its deals with countries in West Asia. But the U.S. aggression against China is another reason, which may explain why it's planning to sell almost $1 billion worth of arms to Japan and Singapore.
The United States has given the green light to more arms sales to East Asian nations in a bid to counter China. The package of arms and munitions, which is worth $900 million, has been approved by the State Department and is set to be sold to Australia, Japan, and Singapore. A potential deal with Australia includes 80 Lockheed Martin precision-guided air-to-surface missiles and associated equipment. The deal, which is set to be worth $235 million, will allow Australian jets to stay outside the range of the opponent's air defense units while launching attacks. Back in April, Canberra approved that $2.44 billion US dollars worth of, quote, improved weapon capabilities be quickly delivered to the country from the US. Australian officials claim they need the equipment to meet the country's increasingly complex and challenging strategic environment. The package for Japan would include 150 advanced medium-range air-to-air missiles. The missiles, which are to be installed on the country's F-35 fighter jets, are worth more than $290 million. Singapore will receive $630 million to supply its fighter jets with air-to-air missiles. Australia, Japan, and Singapore are considered U.S. allies in the Indo-Pacific region against what Washington describes as the rising threat from China.
Yeah, this one, these sales of weapon to Japan and Singapore basically came after a speech of General Milley, where he complained about the aggression, the posture of the Chinese military, especially the pilot, when they intercept any aircraft from the United States or from their ally. So they said that they wanted to give a weapon to be effective against possible interception of aircraft.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In the fight against inflation, the European Central Bank ECB, the Bank of England and the US Federal Reserve risk either doing too much too soon or too little too late. We have prepared for you an article written by Larry Elliott. The piece is titled Interest Rates, the Three Central Banks Facing One Tricky Balancing Act. whatever it takes. With those three words, the then head of the European Central Bank, ECB, quashed doubts in July of 2012 about whether the euro had a future. Mario Draghi's message to the financial markets was that they should not doubt his commitment to defend the single currency. The warning worked. 10 years later, the European Central Bank, the ECB, is again in the spotlight, but so are two other major central banks, the US Federal Reserve and the Bank of England. All three are facing the same problem: what to do about annual inflation rates that are nudging 10%. A crucial month kicks off on Thursday, 21st of July, when the European Central Bank will raise interest rates for the first time in 11 years. With neat symmetry, Mario Draghi is once again playing a pivotal role, this time by threatening to quit as Italy's Prime Minister. The prospect of the European Central Bank toughening its stance had already alarmed the markets even before a political crisis in the Eurozone's third biggest economy loomed. Investors demanded a higher premium for financing Italy's huge national debt. So, in an echo of events in 2012, the yield or interest rate on Italian bonds has risen. The gap or spread, when comparing with German bond yields, can be expected to widen further should Mario Draghi resign. This creates a dilemma for the European Central Bank. On the one hand, it is committed to tackling inflation, but on the other, it wants to minimize the impact on Italy. IPEC Oskar Deskaya of Swiss Bank said, "No matter if Italy goes into turmoil or not, the European Central Bank will have to hike interest rates in the coming days," and say that they will do more if needed in the coming meetings. Christine Lagarde, Mario Draghi's successor as European Central Bank president, said her team would come up with a new instrument to shield Italy from any adverse impact of higher interest rates, and the financial markets expect her to deliver in the coming days. Neil Shearing, the chief economist at Capital Economics, said 10 years after Mario Draghi's pledge to do whatever it takes, Christine Lagarde risks repeating history. She must avoid drifting into another crisis that would ultimately require her to make a similar pledge to her predecessor. The weakness of the euro against the US dollar is an added complication and one reason for the single currency falling below parity for the first time in 2 decades. Earlier this month is that the US interest rates are already at 1.5% to 1.75%. while the European Central Bank's main interest rate is zero. So after recent decision in Frankfurt, attention will shift to Washington, D.C. Whereas the decision for the European Central Bank boils down to whether interest rates should rise by a quarter of a percentage point or half a percentage point, the U.S. Federal Reserve is mulling whether to tighten by three quarters of a percentage point or even a full percentage point. Up until the release of the latest U.S. cost of living data, the assumption on Wall Street was that the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell and his colleagues would repeat June's 0.75 percentage point increase. However, recent news that inflation had jumped to a 40-year high of 9.1% unsettled investors by prompting fears of a tougher response. Krishna Guha of Evercore, the investment bank advisory firm, said the signs were that the U.S. Federal Reserve would opt for the smaller 0.75 percentage point increase. He said, "This is still a big move and we expect the U.S. Federal Reserve will be resolutely hawkish in terms of the rate path, the future course of borrowing costs, but sticking to a steadier sequence of hikes reduces the risk that the Fed overshoots badly. That is, raises interest rates much more than ultimately turns out to be required to tame inflation. The same tricky balancing act, preventing inflation from becoming embedded while at the same time avoiding sending the economy into recession, is causing headaches at the Bank of England, which will be the last of the three central banks to announce its policy decision. Threadneedle Street's Monetary Policy Committee has raised interest rate at its last five meetings. They currently stand at 1.25 percentage point. A sixth increase is seen by the City of London as a nailed-on certainty for early August, with opinion divided on whether the bank will opt for a quarter or a half a percentage point increase. Andrew Bailey, the Bank of England's governor, said recently both would be on the table at the Monetary Policy Committee's early August meeting. Britain's annual inflation rate, which rose to 9.4% in June, is forecast to reach 11% later this year, intensifying a squeeze on living standards that already threatens to send the economy into reverse. Capital Economics is convinced the Bank of England will continue to raise interest rates to 3%, even though it will mean doing so while the economy is in recession for the first time since 1975. Others think the Monetary Policy Committee, the MPC, will go easier as it grapples with 1970s-style stagflation. James Sproul of Handelsbanken thinks the Bank of England will stop raising interest rates when they get to 1.75%. As Michael Saunders said in his valedictory speech as a Monetary Policy Committee member recently, the choice boiled down to whether the Bank of England, the US Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank would rather risk doing too much too soon or too little too late. Two things are certain. A whatever-it-takes approach to inflation will be costly, and the credibility of all three central banks is firmly under line. Until January of this year, Britain's inflation surge was on course to be short-lived. Now it seems the Russian special operation in Ukraine and a splurge of untargeted handouts by the Biden administration during the pandemic, which have served to push up prices in America, will keep inflation in Britain high into next year. Those governments that have borrowed in dollars face a double whammy. Not only will they need to raise domestic interest rates to limit the impact of import price rises, they will also face a massive jump in interest payments on their dollar borrowings. Emerging markets and many developing world countries will be broke when the extra costs are combined with a loss of tourism from the COVID pandemic. Sri Lanka, for example, has already gone bust, and many more countries could follow. For the past three decades, Western banks have marketed low-cost loans across the developing world as a route to financial freedom. The Zambian government borrowed heavily before the pandemic to become self-sufficient in electricity generation. It is a laudable aim, but has left the Central African state with a ratio of debt to national income, or GDP, much to the same as France's, about 110%. The problem for Zambia is not the same as for France, which pays an interest rate of 1.8% to finance its debts, measured by the yield on its 10-year bonds. The Zambian 10-year bond commands a rate of 27%. Now Zambia, like France and so many other countries, must borrow simply to live. To invest is to borrow more. There is no sign that the United States will change course. Joe Biden is in a panic about the midterm elections, when fears of spiraling inflation could favour the Republicans. This panic has spilled over onto the US Federal Reserve, which has adopted hysterical language to persuade consumers and businesses that higher interest rates are coming down the track and to curb their spending accordingly. The US Federal Reserve knows inflation is a problem born of insufficient supply that only governments can tackle. but that doesn't look like stopping it from pushing the US economy and everyone else's economy into recession.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and let us ponder on some important points taught to us for our salvation by the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. No foot of a person will move on Judgment Day before being asked about four things: his years and how he spent them, his body and how he used it, his wealth and how he earned and spent it, and about his love towards us, the Ahlul Bayt.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear listeners. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And today we are talking about the principles of friendship. Under the principles of friendship, we have been talking about very specific topics that are very important for us to look at and are very important for us to know, to check on them and work on them in order for us to build a healthy, mature relationship and friendship. Now, today we are going to talk about how to achieve a successful friendship, how to be a successful friend. One of the main points that will lead us to be successful friends or will make us achieve a successful friendship is having good relationship. What does it mean by good relationship? Good relationship here means that whenever you are approaching your friend, you are approaching someone who you want to be your partner, who wants to be your partner, approach them with good relationship. Let me give an example, like smiling. Approach this particular person with a smile, with good energy. This will definitely attract them to you and make them feel attached to you. Why? Because mostly people in this life have closed gates. People are living in a deprived kind of world. The life has become a bit, has become in a way that it makes people feel sad, feel less liked, feel less appreciated in the society. So the moment you approach someone with such an energy, with the smile, you are definitely attracting them to your side. Now, Imam Bakir alayhi salam has guided us with a saying by saying, smiling is a good manner and open face is a source of attracting love and closeness to the Almighty Allah. Imam Bakr continues by saying, and frowning faces and bad manners is a source of hatred and remoteness from Allah. Whatever Imam is trying to tell us in this particular saying, the holy saying, is that we need to use smiling as a tool to attract people to us, as a tool to build up a good relationship between us and the people we want to be our friends. Smiling is a good thing, and the opposite of it, frowning, is a bad thing. Let's stay away from it.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we've been talking about how to achieve a good friendship, how to achieve a successful friendship. Under the topic of how to achieve a successful friendship, we were talking about a good point that will help us achieve that particular friendship, and that is building up a good relationship, like smiling to people, approaching them with good energy, and so on and so forth. So what are the good of us building up a good relationship with people is that they are definitely going to affect the psychological part of the partners that we have, psychological part of the people that we consider as our friends. Now, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam guides us on how to associate with people so as to attract them and acquiring success in our relationship. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "Do not try to attract people with your wealth. Attract them with an open face and a smiling face." What does it mean? Attract people with you having a good manner towards them. Attract people with good energy. Smile to them. Show them love. Show them that you're welcoming them. Not money. You can show someone money. Money really doesn't add up in anything as far as friendship and the inner feeling is concerned. Money really doesn't help us. It doesn't portray anything in terms of friendship and in terms of the world that we're living in and the world of the hereafter. Money is just, we could say that money is like something we use to reach to something, like a bridge for us to reach somewhere, to reach to our needs, to deal with our needs. But when you attract someone with money and you're attracting them to be your friend, definitely that particular friendship is never going to be successful. Why? Because the basis of the friendship is materialistic. You are giving them money to be your friend. So the day you'll stop giving them money, they'll stop being your friends. But how is smiling? Smiling is good. How is good energy? But having good energy towards them is good. You can have that throughout your life. An old person can do it. A poor person can do it. A rich person can do it. So we are advised to be having good relationship towards the people that we want them to be our friends by having good manners towards them, smiling towards them, and not materialistic things. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. Until next episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en/islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
British paleontologists have made an exciting fossil discovery which has been identified as the earliest known animal predator.
It's quite a large fossil. It's the preserved part is at least 20 centimetres tall, and it would have lived attached to the seafloor bottom. But it's a broken specimen, so we actually don't know how large the entire colony is. This is only a fragment of it.
Wilby says the animal had a stalk and a cup on top with little tentacles, which most likely used to catch food out of the water. The ancient animal is related to sea anemones, jellyfish and corals, and pushes the known existence of these species back to 20 million years. Wilby explains the fossil displays a key point in the evolution of animal. The fossil is said to be around 560 million years old and was discovered in Charnwood Forest, northern England, amongst over 1,000 other fossils. Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed pitch. Valerie actually tried to remove the tank, but ultimately because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year.
Summer heat is here, and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pyrenees Zoo, located in Wallonia, in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it.
Iran's city of Rafsanjan has hosted an international talent contest dubbed Stage Stars. The event is aimed at providing a chance for stage talents from across the world to come in the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali reports from Rafsanjan. Let's check it out.
This is a global stage for talents. The 5th International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in 4 categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the two-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their neck for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that all people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will got the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise, and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Age is just a number when it comes to pursuing your goals. That's what 98-year-old Italian man Giuseppe Paterno has proven. Paterno has become the oldest university graduate in his country for the second time. In July 2020, he was graduated in history and philosophy from the University of Palermo. 2 years on, he's now got a master's degree in the same subject. Paterno grew in a poor family in Sicily and always had a desire for learning, but he was unable to go to university at a young age. He finished high school aged 31, 6 years after he got married. Paterno's love to study or for study never stopped, making him enter the university in his 90s.
The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four. Some rescue stories are tragic, but this one has a happy ending. A stranded elephant and her calf have been pulled out of a drainage hole in a dramatic rescue mission during monsoon rains in Thailand. The mother elephant was guarding her calf that had fallen into a golf course drain hole when rescuers arrived. Vets had to use tranquilizers to subdue the frantic mother, but on her way down, she hit her head on a concrete block, knocking her unconscious as she fell into the muddy cavity. Rescuers used a crane to lift her out. It took two men jumping up and down on her chest to resuscitate her. Meanwhile, a digger was brought in to move the muddy earth and create a ramp for the calf to climb out. It took the team more than 3 hours to finish the operation. During a routine X-ray examination of one of Van Gogh's paintings, art conservators at the National Galleries of Scotland have discovered a secret self-portrait.
When we saw the X-ray for the first time, of course, we were hugely excited, absolutely thrilled to bits. Such a major discovery of an alternative composition happens once, twice in a conservator's lifetime.
The self-portrait was found during an examination of an 1885 painting by Van Gogh as the museum was prepping for an upcoming exhibition on Impressionism. Hidden from view for over a century, the self-portrait is on the reverse side of the Dutch artist's painting called The Head of a Peasant Woman. It was found beneath cardboard and layers of glue. Van Gogh is known to have often reused his canvases, working on their reverse side as well.
When he took the painting to Paris, he didn't have very much money. He was scrabbling around and decided clearly to use the back of these series of paintings that he'd brought with him from the Netherlands to Paris to explore self-portraiture for the first time.
Experts at the museum believe the materials covering the self-portrait were applied in the early 20th century before the art went on display. Art historians say when Vincent van Gogh was low on money, he took to painting on both sides of his canvases, but over the years, some of his reverse side paintings were covered up and lost. The X-ray image will feature at the Royal Scottish Academy in Edinburgh starting in July.
Children in Qatar are helping a conservation program revive the population of a critically endangered species of turtles. The children help release the baby turtles after they hatch, which usually takes place during the dark hours of the evening. The hawksbill mothers are cared for, if needed, when they arrive at the beach to lay their eggs. When the little turtles emerge, the weaker ones are taken to facilities at the foundation. There they are cared for until they are strong enough to be returned to sea. Program managers say getting children involved helps raise awareness about the endangered species and how they can help prevent some of the challenges these turtles face.
As adults, we are kind of beyond hope. Our brain is no longer plastic. We can't really learn new things. But children have the power to really internalize all these things that they're learning, that they're seeing. They make these habits part of their life. They make decisions based on, is it good for the environment, alongside with economic value for money kind of decisions. And this is what we want to cultivate.
The children also get a chance to form bonds with the hawksbill turtles. Some of them have even named the one they are going to release. That's why life experts with the conservation program say only 1% of every 1,000 hatchlings make it to adulthood. Poaching, climate change, fishing nets and marine pollution have all contributed to the dwindling numbers of the species. The program was launched roughly a decade ago and has released 30,000 hatchlings into the sea in the last 5 years. Experts are optimistic about the success of the program.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
U.S. Republicans on House January 6 committee suggest the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas could be compelled to testify voluntarily about her involvement in Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election. We have prepared for you an article written by Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled Cheney and Kinzinger Tee Up Possible January 6 Subpoena for Ginny Thomas. House January 6 committee could subpoena Ginny Thomas, the wife of the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, if she will not testify voluntarily about her involvement in Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election. The news from panel member Liz Cheney came 2 days after Trump's former strategist Steve Bannon was convicted of criminal contempt of Congress for refusing to cooperate with the committee. He now faces time in jail. On Sunday, 24th of July, the second Republican on the committee, Adam Kinzinger, said, "You can't ignore a congressional subpoena or you'll pay the price," a warning, he said, applied to any future witnesses too. Liz Cheney, vice chair of the panel, told CNN's State of the Union program, "The committee is engaged with Ginny Thomas's counsel. We certainly hope that she would agree to come in voluntarily, but the committee is fully prepared to contemplate a subpoena if she does not." Ginny Thomas corresponded with Mark Meadows, Donald Trump's chief of staff, and John Eastman, a law professor who shaped the congressional side of a push which culminated in the deadly Capitol attack. She also corresponded with Arizona Republicans about attempts to overturn Joe Biden's victory in that state. Her activities have added to pressure on her husband. The arch-conservative was the only justice to say that Donald Trump should not have to release records to the House committee. His wife's communications with the Donald Trump camp were subsequently revealed. Some on the left have called for Clarence Thomas to be impeached, a political non-starter. Liz Cheney said, "I hope it doesn't get to a subpoena. I hope Ginny Thomas will come in voluntarily. We've certainly spoken with numbers of people who are similarly situated in terms of the discussions that she was having, so it's very important for us to speak with her." Steve Bannon was convicted after the committee made a criminal referral to the Department of Justice. But in Mark Meadows' case, the Department of Justice declined to pursue charges. Adam Kinzinger told ABC's This Week program, "Those who defy subpoenas should face justice, right? Come in, you can plead the Fifth if you want in front of our committee, but you can't ignore a congressional subpoena or you pay the price." Kinzinger added, "That's to any future witnesses too." Elaine Luria, the Virginia Democrat who with Adam Kinzinger presented the committee's case in a hearing on Thursday, 21st of July, told NBC's Meet the Press, "I don't think the Department of Justice can revisit something that they've already dismissed, but Mark Meadows is certainly someone who has probably more information than anyone, you know, other than the folks who we have already heard from, who were in the White House on that day. Elaine Luria added,